We're ready to get started then for on our monthly status update. The agenda here is just the usual, and we're going to keep you hearing some opening remarks, and then we'll get some status reports on ongoing issues. Let me begin by reviewing with you what I understand we're going to be looking at today. We'll spend a few minutes hearing from the independent monitoring team with some opening remarks. Then we're going to talk about in-service training for about 30 minutes from 1:15 to 1:45. Most of that presentation will come from the city, with a few questions and answers, questions and potentially follow up from the attorney general and the court. And then in the final, say five to 10 minutes, we'll be talking about bringing a status update on our previous hearing, the investigatory stops, the search warrant process, and ISRs. And then finally, last 5 minutes would be time for comments from the coalition if the coalition's with us and has made requests to be heard. So why don't we get started then with just opening remarks from the independent monitoring team, and then we'll turn to the issue of in-service training.
Great. Thank you, Your Honor. And thank you for convening us here today. Last month, the court began what we intend to be monthly status hearings regarding the ongoing process under the consent decree. While our independent monitoring reports naturally look backwards at 6 month snapshots of compliance efforts, it's our hope that through these public status hearings, the court and the public may receive updates regarding current efforts and plans that are going on in real time. Last month, the CPD provided an update on current achievements and challenges in CPD's Tactical Review and Evaluation Division, and that is known as TRED. The independent monitoring team will report on, among other things, how those developments in compliance with the consent decree in IMR 9, which will cover the compliance efforts between July 1st, 2023 and December 31st, 2023. So it's ending in just the next couple of weeks. And we intend to file that report in the first quarter of 2024. Today, we will be hearing from the CPD regarding their in-service training for 2023 and their plan for in-service training for 2024. Many of the early efforts of the consent decree focused on drafting and revising policies to align with the consent decree best practices and the community feedback. And as a result of these efforts, the CPD has reached and level of preliminary compliance, the first of three levels of compliance with most of the original requirements. The CPD must then continue to train officers and personnel on these policies to ensure that officers are aware of and equipped to meet the expectations of the CPD and the Chicago communities. I'll now turn it over to my colleague, Anthony Ray Sepulveda, who will address our recent report and our ongoing efforts with the comprehensive assessment, and Stella Oliolabu, who will describe in our most recent assessments about CPD's in-service training progress.
Thank you, Monitor Hickey. The independent monitoring team reports on the City of Chicago's and the Chicago Police Department's progress under the consent decree twice a year. Most recently, the independent monitoring team filed Independent Monitoring Report 8 and Part 1 of the comprehensive assessment in November. This report is available on our website, cpdmonitoringteam.com, and includes the compliance status for all original requirements. As Monitor Hickey referenced, the independent monitoring team measures compliance with the consent decree requirements in three benchmarks. The first, preliminary compliance, often refers to whether corresponding policies, procedures, or other written materials are in effect. The second, secondary compliance, which is most relevant to today's discussion, often refers to whether the responsible personnel have been appropriately trained on those policies. Through June 30th, 2023, the city and the city's entities have achieved at least secondary compliance with about 35% of the original paragraphs with requirements. We expect to file part two of the comprehensive assessment early next year, which will include the independent monitoring team's recommendations for changes to the consent decree that we believe are necessary to achieve and to accelerate full and effective compliance with the consent decree, including meaningful training and measurable implementation. This will achieve, and the hope will to be to achieve and sustain the intended results, the intended outcomes of the consent decree. The City of Chicago and the Office of the Illinois Attorney General, as the parties to the consent decree, will ultimately determine what modifications, if any, are made. With that, I'll turn it over to my colleague, Stella Oyelabu.
Thank you. Today, we expect to hear from the City of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department regarding the progress with in-service training. Throughout the 8th reporting period, the Chicago Police Department has made considerable efforts to provide training to its officers. In April of this year, for example, the city and the CPD opened the new joint public safety training facility, and the CPD launched the scenario-based training arena for recruit and in-service training. As with other divisions, the CPD's training support group, which is the CPD group responsible for overseeing CPD training, has been impacted by staffing challenges. The CPD has taken steps, however, to bring in outside instructors to teach specific courses such as the Fair and Impartial Policing course. We expect to hear today about the CPD's ongoing efforts to meet consent decree requirements. The IMT will continue to emphasize the importance of implementing a clear and consistent instructor selection and training evaluation process to ensure that the CPD is continuously measuring and improving the effectiveness of its training, addressing feedback from its officers, and providing instruction that best prepares its officers to meet the needs of the CPD and Chicago's communities. We look forward to hearing more from the city and the Chicago Police Department today regarding the in-service training program. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Ms. Oyalabu. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. I am interested in this issue, and I think we're going to be hearing from the city about the in-service training efforts and progress that's being made. So why don't we turn to that issue right now?
Sure. Good afternoon, Your Honor. Alan Slagle on behalf of the City of Chicago. We have with us today Commander Ralph Cruz from the Training and Support Group. The commander and the Training and Support Group should be congratulated on having achieved the consent decree monitoring requirements of 95% of the department having been trained on all of the four courses for in-service training this year, as well as 95% of the department having received the 40 hours required by the consent decree. So with that intro, I'm going to turn it over to Commander Cruz, who has a detailed presentation for the court and the public today.
Good to see you.
Can you guys see my screen?
Yes, okay. Looks like it.
All right. Good afternoon, Your Honor. I'm Commander Ralph Cruz from the Chicago Police Department's Training and Support Group, and we're here today to talk about training updates for our 2023 and 2024 training years. So for the sake of time, I could talk about each one of these for a half hour, so I'm going to speak to certain things, but if you have any questions at any time, I will stop and answer any questions that you need. So for our 2023 training program, as Alan said, we do have a consent decree mandate that we have to have 95% of our members trained in each individual course, and collectively 95% of our department has to be trained in 40 hours, which I'm happy to report that we reached that benchmark, and we are currently sunsetting these programs. So what we want to do here in the training academy is we want to build training that's foundational, training that we can build off. So we don't want ephemeral, short-lived training. So the training I'm going to highlight is going to be the ones that you're going to see a common theme, trainings that are going to be carried off, and you're going to see it in next year's training also. So annually, we have to have 8 hours of de-escalation, response to resistance, and use of force training. So this year, the first course we're going to talk about is going to be that class, and we teamed up with PERF, which is the Police Executive Research Forum. It is an independent entity that's been around for about 50 years, and it they focus on decreasing the use of force with law enforcement, increasing community policing, things like that.
Say the name of that organization again.
PERF, the Police Executive Research Forum, P-E-R-F.
Okay.
So we teamed up with them, and they have a 12-hour class that they researched. They went to Scotland because the Scotland Police Department is unarmed. So they went over there, and they learned how they deal with people who may be in crisis and are either unarmed or armed with anything other than a firearm. And they were seeing how they were able to encounter these situations and mitigate them without the use of deadly force. So they went over there, and they learned these tactics and techniques. And then they work nationally with SWAT teams to figure out how they de-escalate. And they combine to make, it's called ICAT, Integrating Communications Assessment and Tactics, where they're using these techniques to teach law enforcement nationally. So What they did was the first 8 hours of this class, they actually went across the country and they got body-worn camera footage of officers who actually used these techniques, and they mitigated them without the use of deadly force. So the officers were able to learn these techniques and actually see them in real time on these body-worn cameras, like letting officers know that this isn't just theory. This is actually practice. This is a very good way to do things. So a foundational part of the ICAT training is the CDM, or the critical decision-making model. So the critical decision-making model talks about, you know that officers have a very difficult job. They're going into unpredictability. So under that unpredictability, they're going to have to make quick decisions under stress. And in those moments, they have to take into account collecting information. They have to make sure that the information that they have, things like, do I have the legal right to be here? Do I have the proper training and equipment at this moment? If I don't, should I call somebody that does? Should I get the SWAT team here, maybe a CIT officer, things like that? Once you understand and collect information, you make sure that the decision that you make, do you have the legal right to be there? Do you have our laws and policies in conjunction with your actions you're about to take? And then take that action, and then you assess. If that action isn't working, if what you thought was going to happen or was going to work isn't, you can't keep doing that. You know, that's not good practice. So they want you to reevaluate what you're actually doing, and then they want you to reassess, and you go through the whole process again if it's not working. But important with this, the center of the critical decision-making model is ethics, morals, proportionality, and sanctity of life. So in essence, is saying just because you can do something doesn't mean you should. Like if you see a situation where somebody's armed, but they're in a wheelchair, you know, just because you can use force doesn't mean you should. It's not proportional or it's not ethical at this point. So that was a very good foundational piece of the class. So once the officers go through the 8 hours of classroom with that, this ICAT training is a total of 12. So the next day, it's 4 hours of actual hands-on, high-fidelity, stress-induced training. And I forget who just said that. We have a brand-new facility where we have an indoor scenario village, and officers actually get to practice this with role players. And then once the officers finish that, that's the completion of that ICAT course. So before I go on, is there any questions about the ICAT training?
No, you said it's 4 hours.
It's 8 hours. It's a total of 12. The first eight is classroom with facilitation, with watching those videos. And then the last 4 hours is hands-on scenario training.
Yeah, got it. Yeah.
And then to make this a 16-hour class, we added 2 hours of what we call ABLE, Active Bystandership for Law Enforcement. That's a Georgetown University program. It's pretty much the duty to intervene. So if you think about the George Floyd, those officers that were standing watching it happen, it's training officers that we have a duty to stop those bad actions. So last year, the city of Chicago, the police department went into a contract with Georgetown in order to be an organization that adheres to those practices. You have to, they say they got to be taught from the top down, bottom up. So everybody in our department had to be trained in an 8-hour class of this. And then in order to maintain in good status, you have to have 2 hours of ABLE refresher every year. So this year, it was 2 hours of ABLE, and the ABLE refresher was focused on officer wellness, which is important because officers do a lot of things that are good. So ABLE is saying, yes, stop bad actions, but they're also saying this year they're focusing on officer wellness. So if you're working with an officer every day, and today he seems a little bit off, or she seems like she's coming in late, they seem a little bit more, you know, agitated than usual, intervene now. Stop them before they have to go out to the street and encounter that person in the ICAT situation. So officers really took, and I think they appreciated the wellness portion of that ABLE. I think, in my opinion, I think ABLE is trying to make the department a self-regulating organization where you're, you know, trying to stop things before it happens. Any questions on the ABLE course, ma'am?
No, thank you.
Okay. And then we ended that with just updates on our use of force policy suite. The next, so that made it a total of 16 hours. The next class that we had was, like I know the lady said earlier, was our fair and impartial policing. We worked with Lori Ferdell. She's a national expert in implicit bias. So that was a 4-hour class taught by the company Fair and Impartial Policing. And then to make that class an 8-hour class, we added our emergency vehicle operations course. It's called EVOC, and CPR refresher. Any questions on that course?
No, that's all good. Thanks.
Okay. And then the third class, I want to highlight this one, is our officer wellness. We have a great sergeant, Sergeant Elizabeth Schultz. She's been doing officer wellness training for a couple of years. This year, she worked with John Jay University to teach emotional resilience, which is pretty much emotional intelligence, like how to deal with what you're feeling, how to listen to what the other person is feeling, and how maybe how you're standing, your actions can impact the person that you're dealing with. Then she also worked with Washington State University for sleep hygiene, how to get better sleep. And then we worked with Cortico on nutrition, how to make sure officers are eating well. So that, especially in the job that we're in, sometimes you work in food deserts, how to get the best nutrition you can. And then the Cortico company also built us an app. So if you can see my cursor here, this is actually from my phone. Every department member, either sworn or civilian, and their families now has access to this app. And in this app has the last couple of years of our wellness training. So if an officer wants to know about peer support, find a therapist, learn more about nutrition, exercise, things like that, officers now have this at their disposal. So in that class, they actually walk the officers through this course to make sure they download it and make sure that they know how to use it. Any questions on that one, ma'am?
Just to be so I'm clear, these various training organizations come from, like, how do you find them or how do you locate them?
So we internally, we have a whole system. We have our lieutenant is Jack Benigno. He's our instructional design and quality control commanding officer. And then we give our sergeants are over the programs. So like Liz is very self-directed. She's very, research oriented. So she goes out and she finds the best practices in law enforcement, and then she'll submit her recommendation, and then our IDQC will filter it through, and then we'll package it up and we'll send it off to get approved by the monitoring team.
Got it. Okay. Thank you.
And then we also have yoga for first responders. It's also part of that. Any questions? Any other questions, ma'am?
No, that's it. Thanks.
And then the final course to complete the 40 hours of in-person training is our constitutional policing class. That took almost 3 years to get approved and through. We finally got it in, and it just teaches Fourth Amendment, First Amendment, search and seizure, things like that. So that is going to be the completion of our 2023 in-service class. And then we also had a little over 7 hours of e-learning.
Okay. And again, each of these programs is reviewed by the monitor. Is that right?
Yes. So we submit it, and then they give us feedback, comments, and then we go back and forth. And then once they approve it, then we start training.
All right. Thank you. I don't have any other questions about this. Any additional comments from the monitor?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, great. I think we're ready then to move on, at least briefly. Well, let me just, good. Go ahead.
Okay. And so for our 2024 training, what we do every year is we get a needs assessment together, and we see what the department needs internally. We work with organization to see, get public feedback on what the public thinks that we need. Then we take into consideration major events. And then once we get the training plan together, or once we get the needs assessment done, we create a training plan, and then we start the training. So being that we're going to host a 2024 DNC next year, that had a lot of weight on how we were going to do our training this year. And then once we have our needs assessment and training plan, we do a literature review. And on that literature review this year, we did a lot of the after actions for the 2020 civil unrest. So that kind of helped us produce our themes and topics for 2024. And then if we have time, ma'am, would you like me to go through them right now, the courses for 2024?
Sure, quickly. That would be great. Let's do that.
So for the DNC right now, our department is going to be split up into two tiers. Tier one is going to be officers that are assigned operation responsibilities during the DNC, and tier two is everybody else. So we worked with FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, and the Center of Domestic Preparedness, CDP, and we got the three-day field force operations course, which is a national best practice course for anything that has to do with field force. This is like the best industry standard training. So this is going to be a three-day class, and it teaches basic crowd management and advanced tactics. So like those after actions reviews, they were saying, like, for instance, an issue was during a First Amendment rally, you may have a few bad actors, and sometimes police officers were maybe responding to more people than just those bad actors. And this type of training, officers are trained how to extract bad actors while allowing everybody else to exercise their First Amendment rights. So this is kind of an advanced course. It's 3 days. Per the superintendent, any exempt that's going to be assigned DNC responsibilities will also be going to this course. And then we were working with the monitoring team, the OAG, and internally, as soon as we found out that we were going to host a DNC, the department sent our training division, our policy writers, our legal division SWAT team, all went down there to the FEMA in Anniston, Alabama, and we all went to this training together so we can build it collaboratively. So everybody was on the same page, and I can't thank everybody enough for all the help. And this class actually started November 5th, and we're currently teaching the Tier 1 officers as we speak. Any questions on this course?
In connection with training for preparing for DNC, I assume that you're also in contact with state law enforcement and the federal law enforcement agencies as well.
Yes, Chief Dwayne DeVries is the incident commander for this, so they're having meetings with them, and we're just doing the training part of it.
Right. Okay.
The next class is everybody else in the department, that Tier 2, they're getting this 2-day public order, public safety class. Same two entities. This is a brand new course. It just came out, and Chicago is going to be the first agency to actually get it. We went to the beta course in November, and we were very impressed. It's very contemporary. It's very new. Just like in our 2023 training, they're talking about consent decrees in this class. They're talking about having guiding principles. At a national level, it's preservation of human life. Locally, it's a sanctity of human life for us. So then it's very in line with what we're doing. It's reinforcing how we want to police here. And they also talk about ABLE and that duty to intervene. They're talking about it in a public order sense. They're saying, hey, listen, if you start seeing an officer who looks like he's in a heated issue with a protester, he looks to be getting agitated, he's clenching his teeth, he's starting to tense up, they want us to intervene. Hey, call your sergeant, the person next to you, everybody kind of intervene. So we're really happy to see that. They also talk about ICAT and that critical decision-making model. For instance, if you're in a protest and things start to get a little bit out of hand, you got to take into account. You can't, you know, if there's people there with disabilities, people who can't hear, wheelchairs, things like that, they're talking about all this. So we're very impressed with it. Working with the monitors and OAG, we're set to start this, looks like mid-January.
Okay.
And then the next classes, if you can think nationally, the classes that we're teaching in public order, that's from a national scale. It's like, okay, so how, if this is what they want nationally, how do we ensure that what we're doing locally is, you know, consistent with our policy, laws, consent decree, training, things like that. So here is where we really started to work with the monitoring team and the OAG. And for us to get something approved, initially it was you get the policy submitted, created, submitted. That could take months and years. Once the policy is done, then the training gets created based off that. That gets submitted. It goes back and forth months and years. And then finally we can start that training. We knew that we don't have that time. So we've worked with the monitors and OAG, and we asked for technical assistance, and we collaborated, and we simultaneously are creating the policy and training together. So part of that technical assistance, if you look at the picture here to the left, the technical assistance, the monitors said, hey, listen, when you guys are putting your policy together, don't just think about it and put it in writing. We want you guys to actually walk through it. So that's a picture of everyone in CPD, all the stakeholders, legal, law, policy writers, training, Dwayne DeVries, and it's a commander who was there. So we wrote it up and we actually walked through it. That's our field force operations training captain, and those are the officers. So once we walked through that on these two pictures, we actually sat down with everybody and had a meaningful discussion. And in that discussion, we figured, man, what a difference. We had all these thoughts we thought the policy should look like, but as we walked through it, there was a lot of gaps, and we were able to bridge those gaps, and we were able to submit a very meaningful policy to the monitoring team. And then once they got that information, they actually came in for a couple of days. So if you see the picture here, that's Chief Monroe and Metlock, and we're all discussing like what the initial product was, figuring out what they wanted, figuring out what we wanted. And then they actually came with us to McCormick Place, and that's the monitoring team and CPD actually walking through everything that we talked about. It was I think it's going to change the way we deal with the monitoring team and vice versa, because again, it was very, very, very fruitful. But based off of all of that, with our use of force and mass arrest, this looks like it's going to be an 8-hour class. It's going to have scenario-based training, updates to our policies, and lessons learned from the civil unrest. So any questions on that, ma'am?
No, not right now. Thank you.
Try to rush through these. So, and then the next class is going to be our LEMART and wellness course. Our LEMART class is our law enforcement medical and rescue training class. It's a self-aid, buddy aid, first aid course. If officers are injured or somebody else in that time where it's not safe for the fire department to actually come on scene, then officers are trained to treat people. So the LEMART course is based off of preventable death injuries. So based off the research, there's three reasons why someone would die when they didn't have to if they were trained and equipped with some basic stuff. So the first reason why people die when they don't have to is extremity hemorrhage. So if you're bleeding out from an arm or leg, a simple tourniquet, you can bleed out and die in 2 to 4 minutes. A tourniquet you can put on in 30 seconds and you can save someone's life. So officers are equipped with tourniquets. In addition to tourniquets, they also have what's called quick clot. So if you're injured in like the neck and the artery in the neck, you can't put a tourniquet there. So you put this clotting agent in there and it promotes clotting and makes you stop bleeding quicker. The next reason why you die, we don't need to, is tension pneumothorax. At the first responder level, law enforcement, what we can do, it's excess air in your chest cavity. So we have what's called a chest seal. You put it over the hole in the chest, and it prevents air from getting in and letting excess air in the chest out. And then the final reason why you die, you don't need to, is your airway's obstructed. So we just teach officers to put people in a position where their airway's not blocked. So these medical interventions are all in what's called an individual first aid kit, or IFAK. So what we're doing for next year is we started doing this years back, but we started keeping track because we worked with the fire department on being interoperable and having the same equipment. So since 2018, there's been 938 tourniquets applied in the city of Chicago. 381 of those have been applied by Chicago Police Department. So there's a 40% chance that if somebody needs a tourniquet, a Chicago police officer is going to put it on them. So we wanted to highlight that training. We wanted to recognize the sanctity of life and grow that behavior and thank officers. So next year, we are going to have this class. We're going to get everybody brand new IFAK kits. And a lot of the uses of LEMART were caught on body-worn camera. So in this class, officers are actually seeing the LEMART being done, and it, you can see de-escalation. The crowd really calms down when they see officers going hands-on. It's community policing, it's procedural justice. So we're reinforcing all that training. And then we're also adding a bit of wellness to this, which is stress tolerance, which is teaching officers how to breathe and bring down their heart rate and their breathing. Because under a high-stress situation, you have the effects of stress, which would be tunnel vision. You can't see as much because you're so focused in. Auditory exclusion, you're not listening because you're so focused in, and you lose your sense of fine motor skills. But if you teach officers to breathe and bring their heart rate and respirations down, that tunnel vision opens and you can see more, you can hear more. That means you can react better, and then you get your fine motor skills back and you can do more. So we're going to be teaching that in this course. Any questions on that?
No, thank you. No. I'm just thinking that at the, you know, once I've been the consent decree judge for another year, I might know all the acronyms.
So, is there anything you want me to say specifically?
No, that's all right. Okay. You're doing fine.
I'm sorry about that. And then, what we're trying to do is find common themes and make sure that these trainings are not siloed. So we want to make sure that everyone understands the complexity of this and how it's all connected. And our 2024 in-service training course will be those topics, but at the supervisor level. So we're going to make sure our supervisors know about officer wellness, specifically in this course, alcoholism, making sure our supervisors understand their responsibilities in crowd control and mass arrests, in reporting of uses of force, and then especially based on those after actions reports, how to manage protest and make sure we're giving those dispersals, verbal warnings, and we're ensuring that people understand that when they do get dispersed, they actually know which way they're going and things like that. And I have one more slide if you have time, ma'am. That's good.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay. And then the last thing that we have is we have our taser system is we have the Axon taser system. They are now getting, they stopped making the X2 is what we carry now. So we are going to go to the T10 platform. So that's going to be another course that we're going to have next year. And we're going to add that 2-hour able refresher to this. Just some really quick highlights of the taser system. The X2, the one here that we currently have that we're not going to have anymore starting in 2025, It took 50,000 volts of energy to be effective. The T10 is 1,000. The effective range from the X2 was 15 feet. This T10 is now 40 feet. So we're able to do a lot more from a distance. That means we could de-escalate. We can just, you know, make better decisions, things like that. And then the X2, you were able to do what's called a drive stun, where you can actually use a taser handle without deploying the probes and just put it as plain compliance on a subject. We can no longer do that with the T10. So those are just some key differences with those two taser systems. And that's all I have. Thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you. Could you go back to the last slide for just 1 second? Okay. Tell me what drive stun capable means.
So for pain compliance, you could have the handle of the actual taser. So for the taser to work, you have to pull the trigger and it'll be two darts that go out and the two darts hit the person. And that it's what's called neural muscular incapacitation, where the person is now incapacitated for us to be able to handcuff them. In addition to that, the old system, you were able to not deploy the probes, but just use a handle as a pain compliance and like put it on the person's skin, and that would cause pain, like pain compliance. So with the new taser system, you can no longer do that.
Got it. All right.
That's all I have. Thank you.
All right. I think we are more or less on time. I think the next item on the agenda would be for us to hear questions not only from me, but also from the Attorney General. So why don't I find out what questions the Attorney General might have about these training modules that you've identified.
Your Honor, this is Chris Wells from the Attorney General's office, and I'm going to hand it over to my colleagues, Kate Pinella and Mary Grebe, here in just a minute. But before we get too far away from it, I want to highlight one thing from Commander Cruz's presentation, which specifically the LEADMARC training, which, again, sorry for the acronyms, but I promise, Your Honor, that you will get used to them eventually.
I'm getting there.
I just want to highlight it in particular because I think it is truly a success story. It is a type of training that when we proposed it in the course of negotiating the consent decree, I know there was some initial pushback and hesitation and questions about, you know, understandable questions about officers not feeling like they had the capability to perform some of the techniques that are expected in terms of applying gauze to wounds and really kind of combat medical type techniques. But to the city's credit and the department's credit, they agreed to undertake this training as part of the commitments under the consent decree, and they've abided by those obligations, and now officers are trained in this technique and have this capability. And as Commander Cruz indicated, it is actually saving lives in the city of Chicago and in a way that I think is truly a really positive development. It's a technique that applies not just when officers actually are involved in a shooting, but also when officers come upon members of the public who have been involved in shootings between members of the public. And that life-saving capability is truly something I think that should be celebrated. And I just wanted to specifically note the department's embrace of this particular training and the positive benefits that I think it has for the city of Chicago writ large. So with that, I will hand it over to my colleagues, Kate Pinella and Mary Grebe.
Your Honor, my name is Kate Pinella, and I am our team's lead for the training section of the consent decree. And so I just would like to make a few comments in response to the presentation we heard today. Mm-hmm. At the outset, I want to acknowledge that training is an area in which the Chicago Police Department has made significant progress, and today scarcely resembles the department that was the subject of the Department of Justice's report in 2017. The department has come a very long way. At the same time, important work remains to be done. So I would like to briefly discuss some of the improvements CPD has made with respect to training, and also two areas in which the Attorney General's office would like to see continued progress. First, more systemic evaluation of CPD's training. And second, the inclusion of community perspectives in training development and delivery. In the 2017 Department of Justice report describing DOJ's findings after its investigation of the Chicago Police Department, the DOJ described the department without any regular mandatory in-service training. Rather, the department's in-service training was ad hoc and reactive, offered primarily in response to crises, and consisted almost entirely of e-learnings and videos played at roll call. By contrast, in each of the last several years, the department has provided 40 hours of in-service training to over 95% of its sworn members. In addition, the department has begun conducting, as we heard from Commander Cruz earlier, an annual training needs assessment, consulting with various stakeholders regarding officers' training needs, and has used the results of that needs assessment to inform its annual training plan. All of this means that the department is beginning to deliver training in a much more thoughtful, forward-looking way, with adult learning principles in mind, rather than merely responding to the most recent crisis with e-learnings. The Attorney General's office is pleased with these changes, and the department should be congratulated on the immense investment of resources, effort, and sheer strength of will that was required to make these changes so far. Reform of CPD's training systems, however, is far from complete. I'd like to focus on two specific areas in which there is clear need for CPD to improve. The first is the lack of a meaningful evaluation process regarding the effectiveness of CPD's training. To first provide some context for the court, I want to briefly explain the process under the consent decree by which trainings are developed, reviewed, and revised. Paragraph 641 of the consent decree requires CPD to submit all curricula, lesson plans, and course materials related to trainings required by the consent decree to the independent monitoring team and the Office of the Attorney General. When CPD produces training materials to the monitor and attorney general, both teams review the materials and provide written comments to CPD regarding ways that the materials might fall short of consent decree requirements or could better align with best practices for adult learning. CPD reviews our comments, revises the materials, and resubmits them for another round of review. Sometimes trainings undergo multiple rounds of review and comment. Once the monitor or attorney general team is satisfied with the materials, we issue a notice of no objection, and CPD begins implementing a training after it receives no objection notices from both the monitor and attorney general teams. It's important to recognize, however, that while trainings implemented by CPD have generally been reviewed and agreed to by both the monitor and attorney general, the way a training appears on paper and how it is delivered by live instructors may differ in significant ways. Members of the monitor and attorney general teams make an effort to observe live CPD trainings when we can, but our observations can necessarily only capture a small sliver of the CPD trainings being held day in and day out at multiple training academy locations. More fundamentally, a central goal of the consent decree is for CPD to become a department capable of self-monitoring and self-improvement, a department that recognizes problems on its own and is able to self-correct. To that end, the training section of the consent decree contains multiple paragraphs, including paragraphs 286, 287, 288, and 290, that broadly require CPD to develop and implement systems to allow it to assess the quality of its training and specifically the extent to which its training is reflected in how officers perform on the job. Through the eighth monitoring period, CPD is not in compliance with any of these paragraphs. In many cases, CPD does offer surveys to officers to fill out at the end of training courses, asking them to evaluate the quality of the training and the instructor. However, CPD lacks a system by which the results of these post-training surveys are collected, analyzed, and used to inform changes to trainings or instructors. Even more importantly, CPD does not have a system in place to analyze the extent to which training is reflected in officers' on-the-job performance. Thus, while the Attorney General's office commends CPD on the 40 hours of in-service training it now offers to its officers, CPD must take the next steps, collecting the right data to show that its training is high quality and results in officers who police in accordance with department policy and the law. The number of officers trained in 2023 and the courses planned for 2024 are evidence of the success the department can achieve when it devotes resources to reform. We hope to see CPD devote the same effort and resources to evaluating the effectiveness of its training. Secondly, CPD needs to include more community members' perspectives in training development and delivery. Many of the consent decree's training requirements are topics that deeply implicate community experience. For example, paragraph 37 requires CPD to train annually on community policing principles, including building and strengthening community partnerships. Paragraph 72 requires CPD to integrate impartial policing concepts into training. And paragraph 246 requires annual training on de-escalation techniques, to name just a few. All of these are topics that bear on the way that Chicagoans and the police interact every day, and CPD officers would benefit to hear and learn from community members about their experiences. CPD has taken some steps in this direction, including by convening the Training Community Advisory Committee and inviting community representatives from the Use of Force Working Group to observe CPD training. Still, community members' perspectives are largely absent from CPD's training courses. CPD can do more to incorporate community perspectives into training, including by inviting community members to lead or co-lead training segments, asking community representatives to provide firsthand accounts during training courses regarding the impact of police uses of force, and encouraging officers to consider the perspective of community members during training, such as by asking officers to play the roles of community members in simulations. To continue to work towards sustained culture change at CPD and to increase community trust in the department, it is critical for CPD to prioritize the inclusion of community perspectives in the development and delivery of department training. In conclusion, I want to emphasize that the Chicago Police Department has come a long way in both increasing and improving the training it offers to its members. We look forward to hearing about the successes of CPD's 2024 in-service training program and observing some of those courses ourselves. And in 2024, our office is confident that the department is motivated to continue to improve. The Attorney General's office stresses the importance of developing and implementing systems to evaluate the effectiveness of CPD's training, as well as the importance of including community perspectives in CPD training courses. Thank you for the opportunity to offer remarks today.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Pinella. Just a couple of responses from me on all that. I think it's really helpful to recognize, as you have, as the AG has, when progress has been made. I think we really do spend a lot of time talking about things that are going wrong, and it would be great if we can communicate that progress may not be as rapid as anybody would want, but there is progress being made. With respect to the other issues that you mentioned, I agree with you that there ought to be some meaningful evaluation mechanism, some way of determining whether the training is effective and whether it sticks. And so I think that is something that should be examined. With respect to community involvement, I recognize the value of community involvement. I assume that CPD officers role play as community members in connection with their training, but I don't know. I haven't been in on it and would like to at some point observe some of the training. I would just simply comment that with respect to community involvement, as important as it is, it would, I think, be most valuable in connection with training if the community's spokespersons were limited in their accounts to what has happened recently. Otherwise, we really do convey the notion that nothing has changed since the initiation of the consent decree. And that, I think, generates a lot of frustration and cynicism. And I'd like us to make progress and push forward in an aggressive way, but also recognize that where things have improved so that we don't falsely or inadvertently communicate to the public that it's nothing's happened and it's all a waste of time. Are there other comments about the in-service training presentation that we just heard?
John Allen Slagle, on behalf of the city, just a couple quick comments there. We appreciate that the issues that have been raised by the Attorney General's office. And those are things that the city and CPD are focusing on. For example, the evaluation program we have in coordination with Chief Monroe and Chief Bowman asked for technical assistance to review those programs and get their input on them. And that's a priority for 2024. And then with regard to community input, we recognize we could always get more community input and we have to balance that. We're taking a look at what we call the TCAC, another acronym for the group that has been providing input on us. And we have meetings internally set to talk about how that group works and getting more community input on there. So we recognize these issues and they're not going unaddressed. But as you also identified, you know, there has been substantial progress. I can't stress the ability this year for CPD on a calendar year to have trained 40 hours on each of the courses is something that we've all been striving for since the consent decree has been in place, and it has finally come to fruition this year. Obviously, we have to prove that and validate that, and the monitor will check that. But, you know, the numbers internally indicate that we made that earlier this week, and we continue to train people throughout the rest of the year. Commander Cruz, I know it looks like the camera's off. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Oh, no, sir. Thank you.
Hey, great. Well, we really are almost exactly on time. Time to hear about a brief status update on what we talked about the last time we were together, the ISRs, the investigative stop, and the search warrant process. And I think there we'll hear from the city briefly and then from OAG.
I think actually the OAG was going to go first on these.
Okay, good. That's good.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Your Honor. I'm Mary Grebe. I'm the Deputy Chief of the Civil Rights Bureau at the Illinois Attorney General's Office, and I want to provide these three brief updates. First, our office continues to be concerned about the critical understaffing of TRED, the Tactical Review and Evaluation Division. TRED reviews all foot pursuits and firearm pointing incidents and certain uses of force. TRED does these reviews from a department improvement perspective and is not disciplinary. The backlog, which we have raised before last month when we were before you, was about 1,500 incidents that were in backlog. Right. I'm sorry, this month is approximately 5,200 incidents in backlog, which is slightly higher than the reports we received last month of about 5,100 incidents that have not been reviewed. On average, TRED takes about 3.5 months to provide feedback to officers. TRED performs a critical function, and as my colleague Ms. Pinella said, one of the goals of the consent decree is for the department to become an organization which self-corrects. TRED provides feedback and recommendations to individual officers about their conduct, makes recommendations about policy and training changes to department leadership, and analyzes potential trends in the data it reviews. We were pleased to learn recently that TRED is soon bringing on 8 new officers and 1 new sergeant, in addition to 4 non-sworn department members, to increase its staffing levels. And we are hopeful that this increase in staffing helps decrease the backlog and speed up the time it takes to provide feedback to officers. We continue to meet with the city and CPD to receive updates about TRED and have appreciated CPD's candor both with us, the monitor, and in court about these challenges. But we remain concerned that these staffing increases, while a positive sign, will not be sufficient. Because TRED plays such an important role in the department becoming a learning organization and identifying concerns or trends early, we will continue to report to the court on our concerns. CPD's discussion and presentation of the successes of the Training Academy this year and in past years show what can happen when the city and CPD prioritize these critical reform units. Second, as this court is aware, in the past month, the CPD, the Coalition, the Independent Monitor, our office, and this court have met twice to continue discussions about CPD's search warrant policies and practices. These have been ongoing discussions the past year, and we're hopeful that CPD can finalize its search warrant policy in early 2024 and begin training the relevant officers. We expect that the conclusion of the discussions with the Coalition and the written review process from the Independent Monitor and the Illinois Attorney General's Office, the policy governing search warrant practices will comport with the law and national best practices and have the benefit of input from Chicagoans with lived experience. Finally, Your Honor, since our last status hearing, the parties and Independent Monitor met to discuss CPD's progress towards complying with the requirements of the stipulation regarding investigatory stops.
Right.
We understand that CPD is building up staffing, which has more than doubled since July, in the unit that reviews a representative sample of investigatory stop reports, which is a form that officers complete when they stop a person and take any further action. As with TRED, it is very important that CPD reach and maintain sufficient staffing levels to perform this critical work. We also understand that CPD is reviewing written comments from our team and the Independent Monitor regarding its Fourth Amendment stop policies and forms. And we hope to receive a revised version of these policies and forms in early 2024. Although it will take time to see policy changes reflected in practice, we are hopeful that CPD's commitment at the top level to improving its practices translates to changed behaviors between officers and community members in everyday interactions, such as these investigatory stops. Your Honor, thank you for the opportunity to provide these updates today.
Thank you, Ms. Grebe. Mr. Slagle or somebody else from the city, maybe is, I don't know, Ms. Bagby, which one of you would like to weigh in on this?
It's to me today, Ms. Bagby is voice impaired.
Oh.
as many of us have been going through cold. So just a couple of quick comments here. We had a, I would call a robust discussion on Monday. We have monthly meetings with the superintendent and the AG's office and the monitor. And we had one this past Monday was our monthly meeting. And I'd say we had a robust discussion with regard to TRED, the current status, current ways of addressing its backlog and its staffing. And while this number can fluctuate, and it does fluctuate day to day, but people like Chief Navalis and myself and others get a daily report as to the backlog on TRED, and today's backlog number is a little over 4,600. Doesn't mean tomorrow there won't be a lot more reports in, but that's today. We have acknowledged the issue. We are working on it, and we have to see what the benefit is and what happens to the backlog from the additional personnel. I have nothing addition to add on search warrants. I think Ms. Greed provided a very accurate and up-to-date summary as to where the parties are. And you as well know, very well know, and thank you for your time the last few days with regard to search warrants and the policies. And with regard to ISRs, I'm pleased to report that I anticipate we'll be getting back to both the monitor and the AG comments, responses to their comments on the investigatory stop policies.
Okay, thank you. I guess, will there be any final and any comments from the coalition? Okay, I'm not hearing anything right now. So I'll just ask whether the monitor wants to make any final comments on her end?
Your Honor, yes. I think that we have to move any coalition attorneys from attendees to participant status. So we're going to do that so that they can answer for themselves. And I see Alexandra there. It was in the middle of doing everything. So I will tend to my time to Alexandra there. Sorry.
Thank you, Monitor Hickey. Thank you, Chief Judge Pallmeyer, Alexandra Block, on behalf of the coalition. First, I want to thank the Attorney General's office and the city and CPD and the judge and the monitor for holding these regular status hearings. The coalition finds all of the information provided extremely informative and helpful, as do our clients and members of the community. So really appreciate sharing the information today and also giving the coalition a few minutes to address two issues that we'd like to bring to Your Honor's attention. Sure. The first is really a follow-up question on all of the training planning that CPD presented today. We appreciate hearing all of the detailed plans. We appreciate that the IMT, Attorney General's Office, the city are working to focus training next year on issues of rights of protesters in demonstrations, mass crowd control issues. We think that will be very important for the coming year. As the court might be aware, the coalition and the parties, Judge Dow, the monitoring team, heavily negotiated a new policy on the First Amendment rights of protesters that went into effect in December of 2022 in the wake of the George Floyd uprising. The new policy made significant improvements in how CPD should be treating First Amendment protected speech. For example, the policy restricts uses of batons and pepper spray, prohibits kettling of protesters without a way to escape, specifies new accountability and transparency mechanisms. This was really significant progress that we believe the parties and the coalition made together. We would like to emphasize the need for the upcoming trainings in 2024 to train specifically on this very heavily negotiated policy. We'd appreciate either today or in the future if we could receive some information to confirm that those issues will specifically be the focus of training in 2024. The next issue that we wanted to raise on behalf of the coalition is the need to overhaul how CPD engages with the community in its policy development process. We've heard that, you know, a lot of the policies are completed and are moving into the training phase, which is true, but there are still a number of really, really crucial policies that are not completed. Beyond search warrants and Fourth Amendment, as you've heard today, the policies include how officers interact with youth and usage of officer body worn cameras are just two recent policies that CPD has re-released for public comment this month. Both of those policies, the interactions with youth and body-worn camera policies, were originally released 9 months and a year ago, respectively. And the coalition provided extensive comments on the first drafts of those policies. In December of 2022, a year ago, the coalition sent the parties an 8-page letter recommending crucial changes to how officers use body-worn cameras and how supervisors review that footage. In June of 2023, the coalition sent a 14-page letter recommending numerous policy changes to the youth interactions policy, changes based on our subject matter experts, our clients' lived experiences, in investigation that we did with many youth-led organizations here in the city of Chicago. And I'm very sorry and frustrated and disappointed to have to report that the Chicago Police Department ignored nearly all of the coalition's feedback on both of these policies. We recommended, you know, the policies based on best practices, up-to-date recommendations from experts, and spent, along with our clients, hours preparing these recommendations, and only to see that, you know, 9 months and a year later, CPD reissued these policies essentially unchanged. And CPD also, as it always does, failed to explain why it did not adopt the coalition's recommendations for best practices on these policies. It also failed to explain why it took so much time to reissue these two policies. Clearly, it wasn't taking time to incorporate community feedback because our recommendations for best practices were not incorporated in these two policies that were re-released this month. So you're on our bottom line. CPD's community engagement cannot continue in this fashion. Our clients and community partners spend hours evaluating, recommending, commenting, submitting suggestions on policies that CPD puts out for public comment, with the goal of making policing better, making our city safer, and making the CPD more accountable to communities in the city, and only to find ourselves completely ignored. We know the monitoring team has consistently raised CPD's lack of effective community engagement in multiple monitoring reports over the years. The Attorney General's office has concurred. Our clients concur. CPD ignores the coalition, ignores the community repeatedly, and this process has to be improved. We've asked in our comments on the comprehensive assessment process that there be working groups between the coalition, community members, and CPD to effectively incorporate community comments into CPD policies. We would also accept policy negotiations similar to the negotiations we are now holding on search warrants and that have been held previously on the First Amendment policy. Whatever the mechanism is, it's imperative that CPD has to develop real community engagement that allows community members' voices to be reflected in policies. Because that process doesn't exist within the consent decree right now. It doesn't exist within CPD's practice. True community engagement really is crucial to CPD's ability to regain trust and legitimacy in the community, which is the core purpose of the consent decree. So thank you, Your Honor, for allowing us the opportunity to be heard this afternoon. We appreciate the time.
Well, I appreciate hearing from you, and I take those concerns seriously. I recognize that there will be, you know, input from the community that can't be adapted by the police or the city for one reason or another. But I also agree that the public is entitled to an explanation. The community is entitled to an explanation about why their suggestions were not adapted. So in that respect, I although I certainly we know that we can't assure you that everything you want is going to happen. It also does seem to me that at a minimum, you ought to be told why it is that the city has chosen, if it does so choose, not to adopt certain recommendations that you're making. What other matters do we, what other comments do we have this afternoon?
Your Honor, could I, this is Craig Butterman, also from the Coalition.
Sure.
Can I follow up just on one short item?
Sure.
I just wanted to piggyback a little bit on the Attorney General's comments, Mary Grebe's comments with respect to community involvement and training, and just wanted to lift up one pending piece really for everyone. So as everyone here knows, there was a use of force working group that was formed as a result of the consent decree that involves really diverse group of people from Chicago communities, representative of those who've been most impacted by police practices and particularly uses of force in Chicago and de-escalation. And as a result of that working group, dramatic success, and this involved, I'll say, and I know from police department's time as well, but hundreds of hours of working group members' times representing the community that really resulted in significant improvements to the police department's de-escalation and force policies that, as Commander Cruz said, that centered the sanctity of human life and policies that, with appropriate training and implementation and accountability on the ground, have the potential to save lives, to make us all safer. The community or the community members or representatives of that working group shared a public report on CPD's force and de-escalation training after having been given the opportunity to not this summer, but the summer before to attend and observe, and saw a lot of good things and also identified a number of serious problems. And what most wanted really to highlight, not just, we encourage the court as well to take a hard look at that report again, but this goes to just community involvement. And one of the things, when you have folks now who have really spent these hundreds of hours and are still committed, deeply committed to working with the city to improve training and to ensure that these policies will be made real, we've made ongoing requests now for a matter of months to have the opportunity to observe the changes that CPD has made in this training, and also to see the updated curriculum and to give that kind of feedback and perspective, the community perspective or parts of the community perspective that that the OAG was speaking of. And we just wanted to emphasize that now, particularly when in speaking about training, that there are community members who are deeply committed and would like to play this partnership role in the process. And I think in a CPD, in response to some of that feedback, has voiced its embracing that critical feedback. And that's the way in which we all get better. And so I'm just hopeful that and would encourage also the court, the monitor, also to push CPD to embrace more of that feedback, and including even when it's critical, and to allow folks, and that's how you really gain credibility and trust, by allowing folks with credibility also in the community to observe and report back, and hopefully we all wind up in a better place.
I appreciate those observations, Mr. Futterman. That's helpful. And I concur that we really do need a spirit of cooperation here, and that will make all the difference in whether or not this is going to work.
Your Honor, the last point, that community engagement is a longer one, but for a short point, based upon recent events and the protests that have occurred here in the Chicago areas elsewhere, every member of the Chicago Police Department was re-enrolled in a First Amendment training that was part of the e-learnings that Commander Cruz referenced. So the department recognizes the priority of that topic and that training, and everybody was re-enrolled, and there's future trainings in 2024 as discussed by the commander.
Okay, good. Thanks. Any other final comments?
No, Your Honor.
I just want to point out, though, for those of you who are, you know, interested in following this, the monitor reminded me this morning of an item in the paper that is worth looking at in the New York Times, at least the online version, reporting on problems that the New York Police Department has had with body-worn cameras. And Chicago gets mentioned in a positive way as having at least avoided some of those problems and used and relied on the footage from body-worn cameras in an effective way. The other thing that's been in the paper as recently as last week was, again, this is the New York Times, a kind of a disturbing story about private police training programs that are, at least in some respects, not what appear to be models of good policing. And I'm cheered to know that the training that's been developed in this context has largely been reviewed with the monitor and the AG. And obviously that's important. We also do want to make sure that the coalition's voice is heard as has been expressed here. All right. We will be setting another status, obviously, in about a month. We're good to go on that. Any other issues that we ought to be addressing right now?
Not today, Your Honor.
Well, I want to thank you for your time, as always. I know that setting aside time for these hearings is difficult for everybody, but I think it's important for accountability, and it's really important, mostly for me, to stay on top of this and get a solid sense of what's happening. So thank you for your time this afternoon and for your hard work on this ongoing project.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.